Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to Is That Jazz Radio. We'll be right back with our guest, Tanya Comer, from Tanya Comer Interiors. This should be a very interesting show, folks, so stay tuned and we'll be right back with Tanya Comer. Again, thank you for tuning in to Is That Jazz Radio. We have as our guest Tanya Comer for Tanya Comer Interiors. We will talk about design, community, entrepreneurship, perseverance, and dedication. A little nervous right now because this young lady is one of the most dynamic guests we've had on our station so far. And so we would like to bring her on right now. Good morning, Tanya.
Good morning, Tracy. How are you this morning?
I'm doing fine. My heart is pumping Kool-Aid a little bit right now because I'm a little nervous.
Hey, we'll keep it nice and easy. No worries.
Okay. So, thank you for calling into our station, and thank you for your time this morning. I know our guests and folks that listen will definitely walk away being enlightened by our conversation. So we'll start right now. Tanya, what three words do you think define Tanya Comer?
The three words that define Tanya Comer are graced, and that's grace, G-R-A-C-E, generosity, and love.
Can you touch on that? Sure. Yeah, thank you. So, grace.
There was a time when I was going through sort of a hard period in my life, and I created grace as sort of the highest form of myself. So my name being Tanya, I had sort of an alter ego, which was this highest form of myself. When I was operating at, you know, I was at the top of my game. I was experiencing the greatest amount of success, when I felt confident and happy and fulfilled, I would say that that was my grace. Well, there was over a period of kind of thinking about what I was creating for myself by thinking that grace was the highest form of myself, I actually wasn't allowing myself to exist every single day as that particular personality, you know, confident, happy, joyful, persevering personality. So I actually went through sort of this, you know, soul-searching exercise in which I declared that I am grace. And people would always refer to me as graceful or having lots of grace, but I could only see it in myself when I would look at myself when I was at my best. So being able to define it on a day-to-day basis, it's something that I get to live into rather than something that I get to exist that's almost outside of myself. So that's how grace formed as a definition of me. I also said generosity. Generosity is one of my mama's greatest gifts to me. My mother is one of the most generous people I know. And despite having not a lot of resources, I just grew up seeing a woman give so much of herself, her time, her heart, the resources that she had. And I learned by watching, and probably it's in my DNA to be generous as well. And so I'm really grateful that I got that quality from my mom. And then the third word that I use to define myself is love. I am blessed with an incredible ability to love. And I also have a lot of love to give. And as a result, I believe because I have so much love to give that I also have a lot of love in my life. And so it's just something that I experience a lot of in my life, which is love. So those are the three words: grace, generosity, and love.
Okay. Can we touch on your journey, your background? Where are you from?
Sure. I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Okay. And what was life like in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania?
Well, interesting. I was raised in a government housing project in Pittsburgh. And there was a point in my infancy in which I was homeless. And I didn't have the experiences of anything remotely close to a silver spoon in those situations. So it was certainly a life that very much contradicts the life that I have now and that I see now.
Mm. Wow. Tanya, what sustained you during those challenging times in your journey? Like, what did you hold on to? Was it your mother's love, or what gave you the courage to become the person that you are now during those challenges? Yeah, what was your sustaining force? I think our audience would really like to know, you know, like, just what held you together during those times?
Sure. Probably first I'll start with my mom. She's quite resourceful and making sure that I could have something more than she had. She didn't know how to define that. Her view of it was very specific to her. But yet she knew that there was something that I could have that was greater than the life and the projects, you know? Mm-hmm. And so she certainly looked for ways to give me exposure and opportunities that I wouldn't have otherwise. And interestingly, I refer to those exposures and opportunities as breadcrumbs. So each exposure that I got was like, you know, I pick up a little breadcrumb and I'd experiment with what was that, you know, what was that opportunity or experience like for me, and how could I do something with that in my life? So an example was when I was, this is probably one of the life-changing moments in my for me. When I was 11 years old, we attended a church at that time, my mom and I, and there was a family that invited us from the church, that invited us to Christmas Eve dinner. Now, this was a white family, and my mom and I are Black, and the family invited us to this Christmas Eve dinner in the suburbs of Pittsburgh. Now, this is the first time that I can recall being in what seemed like a car ride, like, across the country. it was probably only about a 40-minute car ride, but it seemed like I had gone to California. As I'm sitting in the back seat on Christmas Eve, you know, it's approaching probably 5 o'clock. So we started the drive and it was light out. You know, it gets pretty dark early in the winter. So it's probably 4:30 or 5 o'clock that we started the drive. And by the time we got to their home, it was probably 5:36, something like that. So we started, it was fairly light out, and then all of a sudden it's dark. So we're driving across town to this suburban neighborhood, and just as we were pulling up the driveway, I see this house sort of slightly up a hill beyond this long driveway. The driveway seemed like, you know, it was it was a whole, you know, four city blocks. It just seemed like it went on for forever. And then there's this house, to my 11-year-old brain, looked like a mansion. And I pull up to this house, and my eyes got so big, like literally just so big, like, oh, my God, where are we? And that moment changed my life, because I all of a sudden got to see suburbia, and I got to driveways, and I got to see big houses. And all of a sudden I knew that people didn't live the same way I lived in the project.
Mm-hmm.
So now back to remind you, I'm talking about breadcrumbs, okay? So
okay. We
show up in this family's house, and they welcomed us, and I observed how they were celebrating their tradition and how they were celebrating all of their traditions around the holiday, and all the little kids were dressed in their Christmas sweater and their khaki pants, you know, the little boys, and the girls were in their little skirts with their Christmas sweaters, and all the parents were in dresses, and the men were in shirts and slacks. And all I knew is in my family, we didn't do that. You know, we didn't sit at the table with fine china, and we certainly weren't all decked up in khakis and sweaters for Christmas Eve. And so I was just amazed by what it was like to be on the other side of this. And I took, again, this is a breadcrumb for me. I'm paying attention to all of this, and the breadcrumb was, who are these people? So I asked, oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank on their names, Bill and Betty. What does Bill do for a living? Oh, Bill's a lawyer. What does Betty do for a living? She cares for the house. She cares for the kids. Ah, okay. So what's a lawyer do? That was the first breadcrumb. So I said, at age 11, I want to be a lawyer. And literally when I was 14, I found, junior high, so I must have been 13 at the time. I'm looking for high schools, and there was a high school in the area that had law and public service as part of a magnet program. I want to go to that school. So my first idea of what was possible for a career started with an invitation to go to someone's house for Christmas Eve. And the rest of my life was a journey just like that, in which I had these opportunities or these exposures, breadcrumb, and I began to explore what that was like for me. And I picked up another breadcrumb along the way and explored what that was like for me. And so what I can say is distinguishably different for me as a kid is the exposures that I had along my journey. And gratefully and thankfully, it was my mom who made sure that I had those opportunities and exposures. And so I had a career that's been very rich. I did work at a law firm. I pursued a career 4 years in radio. I worked in advertising, marketing, communications. I have a bachelor's of arts degree in journalism and corporate communications. I have a master's degree in, I have a bachelor's of arts in corporate communications and English. I have a master's degree, master's of business administration degree from Michigan State University in marketing. And my whole career had been following these little breadcrumbs that ultimately, through very circuitous pathway, got me to owning an interior design business 13 years ago.
Can we touch on that a little bit right now, Tonya? And, I mean, I'm stuck on breadcrumbs. Folks,
yeah.
I've had the pleasure of talking to Tonya before this interview, and you'll be amazed how some of the things he says just sticks with you. And so breadcrumbs is actually stuck with me right now in terms of looking at, you know, opportunities like that. Tonya, we mentioned, I believe, in a previous conversation off the air about setbacks and overcoming them and things of that nature. Can you talk about if you faced any during your journey and what was your resolve in handling them?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I faced a lot of them. I certainly faced a lot of setbacks and obstacles. And the only thing that I can see is that, you know, I don't really have anything uniquely different than any other human being in terms of the ability to overcome some odd. I'm no different than Sally, Betty, Bob, or Mary, really. I just have a will to survive, and I have a really big dream. And those two things have kept me pushing through, you know, despite all of the obstacles, just been able to kind of persevere through them all. I mentioned I have a bachelor's of arts degree from Duquesne University. I mentioned I have a master's of business administration degree from Michigan State University. But I have an honorary PhD from School of Hard Knocks, you know? I just kind of push my way through things. Nothing really exceptional. I don't think so. Just a will and a drive and a dream.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask a Charlie Rose type question, but I'm a little nervous now, so I may save that to the last. And for those of you that Charlie Rose is one of my biggest, and I really liked his way of interviewing and his intellect. So hopefully one day I'll, you know, get there. But I was going to ask a Charlie Rose question, and my heart pumped Kool-Aid right before reading it. So let me ask this question, and then we may get back there if my heart starts pumping blood again. Anyway, I think I read once that you have a 7-step plan of action or 7 actions for success. Can you touch on that for us?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, the actions that you're referring to are my 7 principles for accomplishment.
Okay.
And they have been, I developed these principles from during another period in my life in which I soul searched. You have to know, I do a lot of soul searching because there's if you stay where you stay, then it's hard to grow. And so I find myself, you know, when I am facing some challenge or some obstacle or something's in my way, I'll look inside myself and begin to identify what I need or what I can do or what's necessary for me to persevere. And these 7 principles started through that process. I looked at, you know, my strength. I looked at my weaknesses. And I looked at the hard lessons that I've learned along my life journey. And I created these 7 principles for accomplishment. I will share them at a very high level. There's a lot of content for each of these principles, but I'll kind of give the highlights. Is that okay?
Sure. Sure.
All right, great. The first of the 7 principles is strong partnership. I recognize that I need really solid relationships or partnerships in order to help me propel my business to the next level. I can accomplish results that I can accomplish, you know, pretty well. I've accomplished what I've accomplished on my own. When I bring strong partners to the table, now I have an opportunity to explore greater and bigger things. So to bring on partnerships that can help add to the value that I'm able to bring to my client relationships or the opportunities that I pursue. So that's my first principle. This is be unstoppable. Take risk. The second principle is to be unstoppable. I didn't coin the phrase unstoppability. I did not make that word up. But it has a special meaning to me because I've always found myself resisting when people would say be fearless. And I couldn't understand why until one day it became really clear to me. We actually need fear. Fear is healthy, and it will save your life. But
okay.
Go ahead.
I'm listening.
But it's courage that provides room for growth when you're standing in fear, and the courage gets its force from something called being unstoppable. And so I've taken on for myself. To take risks, allow this experience of being unstoppable to kind of guide me through those times when it's challenging or I'm nervous or you have Kool-Aid running through your veins when that happens to me. So number 2 is be unstoppable. Number 3 is follow up. Now, I personally have had a challenge with following up. I have viewed certain ways of reaching out to people as my being needy or asking for something. And that's just, that's something that somehow got ingrained in my psychology, that it's not good for me to ask for help or it's not a good idea for me to, you know, look for support. And in the way of following up, I was approaching it the same way. Like, oh, I'm asking for something or I'm asking someone to do something or go out of their way or respond back to me. And that was getting in the way, as you can imagine, of a lot of progress. And so I've changed the way I look at follow-up to say, follow-up is just an opportunity. That's all it is. Follow-up is taking advantage or exploiting or reaping the benefits from opportunity. Opportunity knocks. Answer the door, Tanya. And so follow-up is my principle number three. Principle number four is listen. I am blessed with really great skill for listening. Part of it is innate, and part of it is learned. I've taken courses to practice techniques in order to master being a better listener. And listening is as valuable, if not more valuable, than speaking in most situations. And so I practice techniques for being a really good listener. Number five is expand my peripheral view. Now, this one you gotta hang in there with me because it's just hang in there with me with this one.
Tanya, you have all the time. I'm sure our guests are enlightened by your conversation. Please take your time.
Awesome. Great. The expand my peripheral view is we walk through life with a lens that has been formed or developed as a result of the experiences that we've had in the past. So we take action, or we move something forward, or we have conversations, or we do things based on something that got shaped that we learned from our past. Well, if in fact we want to have different conversations or meet new people or experience something new in the world or try something else or expand beyond what we know possible, we have to be able to see through a different lens. Because if we look through the same lens all the time, we're only going to see the same thing. So for myself, I've taken on creating new experiences in order to help me expand my view so that I'm not looking through the same lens. And those experiences are in the form of adventure. Those experiences are in the form of learning some new business technique or meeting some person in some different industry. Again, those little breadcrumbs that I talked about that I followed early in my career are examples of how the lens that I developed over my career allowed me to expand and grow.
Okay.
So that first breadcrumb was the lawyer. You know, I want to be a lawyer. So I did that. And then the next breadcrumb was, I want to be a journalist. And I did that. And having those opportunities then expanded what I knew to be possible for myself. So now a girl from the project could actually have more than what is expected of her as a girl from the project because of an exposure. That's expanding the peripheral view. That speaks exactly to that. Number six, no means no for now. No doesn't mean no always. It doesn't mean no indefinitely necessarily. It doesn't mean no just no. It often means no just for now. More often than not, a yes will follow a no. You just have to know how to get to the yes. Now, in business, this is important because we face a lot of no's in business. And if you're working business right, you're going to face some no's. No,
right.
No allows the growth. If you continue to do the things the same way and you always get yeses, believe it or not, you have very little opportunity for growth. So when a client, for example, says no, there's an opportunity now. Oh, wait a second. They didn't buy it the way I presented it? or they didn't buy it the way it looks, or they didn't buy it because I said so, you know, whatever it may be. That no now is a trigger point for identifying how to get a yes. And inside of that is an opportunity for growth. Does that make sense? The no means no for now?
Yes, it did, actually. And yes, it very much did. And how you framed it in a way that it gives an opportunity for growth is, you know, I'm smiling right now. My heart's not pumping way too much anymore, but like that's really, really profound. Just to look at a no that way. Continue, please. I think that was number six. What's number seven?
That was number six. Number seven. I love number seven. I love it because I hate it. Because this is the one that puts me on the edge of my seat and I want to say, no, I can't do it. Number seven are the seven taboo words. So number seven, there are seven taboo words, okay?
Okay.
The words are, I have always done it this way. Those are seven words. I have always done it this way. I sigh because it is so easy to want to do things the same way all the time. It really is. It's comfortable. It feels really nice. You know, it's, you know, I did that way before. It should work this time, right? Well, as long as we exist inside, I have always done it this way, there's real likelihood that we are killing off creativity. We are in creating doom around satisfying clients. We can likely have breakdowns inside of partnerships or relationships. And we can certainly an endless abyss of producing results. Because always doing something the same way is only going to get, you've heard the expression, you will always get what you've always got. You know?
Right.
So the greatest opportunity, and it's a lesson for me in being able to allow contribution in my life and in my business. And that's why I sigh, because it means I have to allow other people to contribute to me so that I can begin to experience doing things differently. And
why would that be sigh to you? Why would you sigh?
Because it's much easier to not allow people to contribute. I'd rather do it on my own. I'd rather do it my way and figure it out on my own. And it's not healthy. It's just a safety net. You know, not relying on people. Not, again, I mentioned this earlier, asking people for something, asking people for help, allowing people to contribute. Those are areas for me where I certainly have, you know, I have to work. Because I am fiercely independent, and that gets in the way of a lot of progress.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your journey just shows that growth is pretty much constant. Like, you have to constantly be in a state of growth, you know, and learning. I'm going to ask you a question that we ask all our guests, and I'm going to say one word, and I'm going to ask your immediate response to it. Like, what's the first thing that comes to mind? Are you up for that challenge?
Oh, man, yeah, I like this question. Go for
okay.
it.
Okay. Devotion.
Devotion.
Hello? Yeah, devotion.
I'm taking it in. Devotion. The first thing that comes to mind when you say devotion is passion.
Okay.
I don't know why, but passion came up for me. I think the reason why that might have come up is because in my own life personally, I call myself a sticker. Sticker. You know, I am very much devoted to, loyal to the things that I declare. I'm loyal to people, I'm loyal to relationships. I'm just very loyal. And I see loyalty and devotion to be synonymous. And inside of that is just this incredible amount of passion for whatever it is that I believe I am attached to.
Okay.
For that particular relationship or that particular thing or that particular pursuit. So passion comes up for me when you say the word devotion.
That was really good. I guess. And folks, that wasn't rehearsed. That was, believe me, it may have sounded, but because she answered so profoundly, but that was not rehearsed.
I had no idea that was coming.
So let's talk about your business.
Sure.
Let's talk about Tanya Coma Interiors. Can we start from the beginning? How did you come up with the idea for the company?
Sure. I actually, 13 years ago, so 2002, I purchased an interior design franchise. After following a breadcrumb, I left a corporate job and took a series of risks in order to identify if interior design was the right career for me. And those risks proved to be worthwhile, so I purchased a franchise. I owned that franchise for 5 years in Maryland, just outside of Washington, D.C. And in 2007 or 2008, relocated to Philadelphia. And during that time of relocation, it was a real opportunity. Again, there's another breadcrumb. A real opportunity for me to evaluate how I could serve my clients, how I wanted to serve my clients. I'm going to be embarking on a new territory. I'm going to have great different opportunities than I had when I was in the Washington, D.C. Marketplace. So how do I want to serve these clients? What do I want my business to look like? And where do I see myself personally inside the world of interior design? So I chose to not keep my franchise business, and instead I rebranded the business. I was able to keep my clients because I maintain a very a healthy relationship with the franchise company and honored my agreement with them. And so I kept my clients, and I rebranded my business, Tanya Comer Interiors. And it was important for me to keep my name attached to my business because I'm in the kind of business that people aren't buying interior design when they work with me. They're buying me. So I wanted to make sure that my name was always attached to the product that I delivered. And so that's how I came up with the idea for Tanya Comer Interiors.
Well, folks, on our website, we're going to have some of the transformations that Tanya, that she's done with her company. And the one word that I would describe it would be art. She's a real artist, and her gift is really, you know, transparent. You can see it right away. So later on this week, we'll have some pictures of her work and definitely some links to her site. But you're an artist, Tanya, and probably...
Thank you.
I mean, for sure you're an artist. And what is your business model?
Sure.
Okay.
There are many ways I can answer this question. So first, let me give you the slogan for my business, sort of the tagline for my business as a starting place.
Okay.
Your soul, your spirit, your lifestyle / work style, my inspiration. My business model is rooted in designing according to the taste, preferences, needs, lifestyles, and work styles of my clients. Now, that's not exceptional by any stretch. Any really good designer is going to tailor their work to their clients.
Right.
What is exceptional is what I bring to the experience of working with my clients. I have a boutique design firm. What that means is I provide a specialized service. I provide that service to a few number of people, and I bring a personalized experience to the process. That's what that means. And the thing that I start with in my interior design work is I am not an architect. However, I believe that the interior architecture sets the tone for the interior furniture and furnishings. So what I specialize in is being able to transform spaces. And that starts first with transforming the environment, the walls, the ceiling, the floor, transforming those spaces so that the room is almost beautiful.
Can you say that again? Because some folks just think, and I'm just going to put this out there, that it's decorating. They don't know that you're actually creating, you're transforming. So can you say what you do again? Because I think folks need to know exactly what I mean by you're an artist. You transform places, correct?
Right. That's correct. Yeah, I transform space. And the transformation starts with transforming the physical structure that defines the space first. So I transform the walls, the ceiling, the floor. And when I do that best, the room is beautiful with no furniture in it. And then I bring in the furniture and the furnishings, and that's when the room just, you know, it smiles. The room smiles. And you may have heard me say this before, Tracy, but I live for making a room smile.
Yes. It comes through, folks. You'll see the pictures, but can I ask you, I know I didn't ask you this, and it's kind of like piggybacking off of this one question. Where does your inspiration come from? Like, I know what we do here on the station to get motivated to play music and all like that. You envision touching folks in places that you may never travel to. So what inspires you when you walk into a room? Like, how do you make that connection?
Well, the first place where I always start is with the client. Because really, as I mentioned before, my work has to reflect my client. I'd like to be in a position in which I can bring style that is unique to my client's expression. So you'll see when you look at my work that no two rooms look alike, because those rooms reflect what's important to the needs, requirements, lifestyles, comfort levels, color preferences of my clients. In fact, I haven't completed any project that reflects my own personal style for another client.
Okay.
So that's the first place where I get my inspiration. And then once I identify what's required from my client, then I have the hard job. That part's easy. The hard job is figuring out, now, how can I elevate what they want so that I can exceed their expectations? I give them what they want and still throw something in that can exceed their expectations. And that inspiration comes from just, you know, broad strokes, looking at space differently, looking at furniture differently, looking at the architecture differently. And the vision starts there for me.
Okay. Who are your clients, Tonya?
Mm-hmm.
Who are your clients?
Yeah, I have both residential and commercial clients. My residential clients, the ideal clients for me are two hardworking individuals who, ideal residential clients that is, are two hardworking individuals that are just way too busy to even think about completing the design on their home. I like that client profile because, one, it allows me some autonomy, ideally. They're just too busy. They don't have time to think about all the details. So that gives me autonomy in what I do so that I can really be creative. And it enables me to really work with folks within particular demographics that are more appealing, you know, in terms of what I can design for. Most people think that I would want to design for a really big home, and that's not my requirement. I actually like intimate spaces. I love small spaces. I think the best design, the best design work is to be able to transform space and bring a level of intimacy to it. And when you already have a small space to work with, you are guaranteed more intimacy. And so so I typically like projects in which I get to, in which I can express design in really unique and interesting ways that bring intimacy. with my commercial clients, I've had all types of clients, spas, corporate offices, law firms, healthcare facilities, restaurants, hospitality suites, oh gosh, the list goes on. And my commercial clients have less of a profile. I've done everything from what we call tenant improvement, which is when a client is moving into a new space in an existing building, and they're given an opportunity to improve that space through a relationship or contractual relationship that they develop with the landlord.
Okay.
And we call that tenant improvement. And that's my sweet spot. Because typically, tenant improvement work is thought to be, we just pick a carpet and some paint. And, you know, maybe we can get some new furniture. And that'll be okay. But I get to bring to the experience of tenant improvement really great design and within budgets that can be reasonable. And it makes people very, very happy. The tenant is happy because they have space that they can love. And the landlord is happy because they love being able to have really good-looking spaces in their building. And so that's my sweet spot. I work really well in that area, tenant improvement. So I think that'll summarize the commercial part.
You know, Tonya, what's a common theme throughout this conversation is exceeding expectations. Expectations mm-hmm. of someone coming up from, you know, very challenging beginnings in Pittsburgh to all throughout. It's like a common theme here is you're always exceeding expectations, which is probably one reason why you were named, you know, in the top 20 of African-American interior designers. So that was quite an accomplishment, you know. We mentioned before when we talked about, I guess, your love for children and things of that nature. How important is it for them to see you as not just an interior designer? I say fashion, folks, because you should see how, you know, she has a great style for fashion also. So I just, yes, okay.
Just know that was one of the breadcrumbs in my journey also.
I'm serious. Folks, wait till you see it, but for real, I had to put that out there. So, but I guess my question is, how important is for youth, particularly our women, and our men, to see someone like not just talent as being an artist and everything else, but just an entrepreneur controlling and managing your own company. How important is it that folks see you as a businesswoman?
That is very important, actually. I want people to see me as someone who lives and exists in the world of the creative. I want that. And I want people to know that I am a person that's dealing with the same challenges every single day of running a business. And you know, those, we talked about my seven principles for accomplishment. My seven principles for accomplishment are the echoes. They are the manifestation of Tanya Businesswoman. None of that is about Tanya Interior Designer. And I have many facets of myself, and so does every other person running or operating a business. We have many, many facets. And it is extremely beneficial to be able to mature in all of those facets throughout life. And my success in my business is not going to be how great an interior designer I am. It's how great of a business person am I? How great of an entrepreneur am I? How great am I as running a corporation? How great am I at building a brand? That's my success. And quite frankly, it's an area where those of us who are just artists struggle. We need both. Or we need back to strong partnerships from the seven principles to bring in partners who can help us manage those parts of our businesses that we can't manage on our own because we don't have the.
Okay. I was talking with a friend of mine from school, and he's, you know, when we went to college way, way back, he said the one thing they didn't teach us was how to be entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. You know, they taught us how to, you know, interview and go work for someone, but there was no push to, like, own your own company and how to be entrepreneurs. So I think you're definitely setting breadcrumbs from other people. So where you're actually a breadcrumb now yourself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Probably for other folks. What's next for Tanya Comer? What's coming down the line? What can we expect?
Okay, so I just mentioned, you know, one of the things that will define my success as a business is how good I am at building a brand.
Okay.
I've been focused, in 2015, my focus really is on brand building. And I've created three brands. I already have Tanya Comer Interiors, and that's my interior design brand. I'm building another brand called Tanya Comer Signature. And that's the brand under which I will be launching products. So I am licensing, for the most part, my pursuits are in licensing products that are within my industry that will, I can brand and sell to a general population. So in May, I launched my first wall tile collection called Boulevard. It was inspired by a walk that I took down a very famous street here in Philadelphia, and I was inspired by the architecture and sat there and sketched one day this tile line that I launched a few months after the sketches were complete in May at a really big trade show in New York. And I licensed that product with a company called Tile Bar in New York. It's an online distributor at tilebar.com. Products should be available. We were expecting them to roll in off the factory, out of the factory, and be on the shelves this month, but it looks like it's pushed back to next month in October.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I'm in pursuit of licensing products. I'm having, after this call, actually, I have a conversation about licensing some other products. I'm looking forward to that. And then the third brand is Tanya Comer Lifestyle. And Tanya Comer Lifestyle is the brand under which I'm going to be taking on media and speaking engagement and putting together a training series for other entrepreneurs or for other interior designers. And so Tanya Comer intends to be an international brand, whether it's interior, signature, or lifestyle. I want all, you know, these will all fall under the Tanya Comer brand umbrella. And I'm looking forward to some really great success and having some opportunities to pave the way for some other folks along the way, along my journey.
I have no doubt that success will come, and more importantly, that you're equipped to handle it.
Thank you.
That's just as important as the success. You seem to have, you know, definitely a clear way of thinking, and this interview has been kind of therapeutic for the host here. It's just been really great talking to you. And once again, we're talking to Tanya Comer for Tanya Comer Interiors. I didn't forget, remember? And so can you give us a way to contact you, our audience, a way to reach you, or if they wanted to reach out and find more about your company?
Absolutely. I'll give my website.
Okay.
www.tanyacomer.com. And it's my first name, last name, .com, TonyaCom, like Mary, .com.
Okay. And from there, they can reach and find out all the things that you're doing, correct?
You bet.
Thank you. Well,
and
folks,
you can also just Google Tanya Comer, and you'll see all kinds of stuff. You'll see links to all of my social media profiles, videos about my business, my video bio on YouTube. You'll see some articles and press that I've received, all kinds of things if you just Googled my name as well.
Okay. Well, folks, we just had a conversation with Tanya Comer from Tanya Comer Interiors. And hopefully my blood pressure will come back soon because, you know, they're not understanding this because I think the thing that that speaks so well of you is just that you seem like, well, you're such a very warm and genuine person and very open. So it was quite an honor to have you on our station. And I think, you know, our conversation is probably going to really affect the lives of some of my students that listen to this program still. And the host really thanks you so much. And thank you for coming on. And we'd like to invite you back at any point in time. You know, how's tomorrow at 10 o'clock? But now I'm in trouble.
I will be back for sure. Maybe not tomorrow, but I'd love to be back on your show. Anytime.
Well, Tanya, thank you so much. And can you hold off for 1 second, please?
Absolutely. Tracy, can I just say thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to your listeners and to share this this time on the airwaves with you. It has been a pleasure and a delight. And thank you for just taking interest enough in me to make it a priority to get me on your schedule and have this conversation with me. I appreciate it. I appreciate you. I appreciate your listeners. And I'm real excited about IsThatJazzRadio.com.
Folks, we are going to sample that, and you'll hear that 30 times a day probably on our station. You think I'm joking? Man, that was so cool. Anyway, Tanya, we're going to end our show with someone that we just interviewed not too long ago named Paris Toon. And Paris, we're going to be talking with him again in New York next month. So thank you so much, Tanya. But can you stay on the line, please? Thank you. My love for
Thank you.